Welcome to Look Behind the Look, the celebrated podcast that explores your favorite looks in film, television, and fashion history. Through conversations with the fashion world's elite and award-winning hair, makeup, and costume designers on sets around the world, you will see and hear exciting tales from behind the scenes, career origin stories, and tons of advice and tips. I'm your host, Tiffany Bartok. Today, we are talking about my favorite show this year, The Dropout, starring Amanda Seyfried. In this episode, we talk about those iconic red lips and how makeup department head Georgie Douglas did much more than just chase a red lip. You've loved Georgie's looks for a while now, if you're a fan of The New Girl. And who isn't? She and Zooey Deschanel have been together all the way since 500 Days of Summer. Show creator Liz Merriweather made The New Girl and The Dropout, which brought Georgie over to The Dropout, and we're going to talk about that project today. I have been chasing Georgie for so long, almost since the show came out. And so thankfully, we connected this summer. So enjoy our conversation.
This isn't an ironic joke, but I'm having a green juice right now. So
I have an ironic joke too. I wore red lips for you. All right.
I was going to say, I noticed.
Hi, Georgie. I'm with Georgie Douglas, the department head for The Dropout, which you all have binged, and now you're here to find out all the secrets of it, of the look, which was incredible. And I am going to ask you all about everything. Okay, Georgie, I'm so happy to have you. Thank you so much for being here from LA. I know you have been working like crazy, and I really appreciate you taking this time to talk to me, because this was my absolute favorite show in as long as I can remember. I mean, I go as far as to say that it's my favorite show since Breaking Bad. It was absolutely, whoa. I know. And I don't know why. I mean, I thought about it constantly when it wasn't on. I couldn't wait for a new episode. I watched it completely alert, and I had seen absolutely everything on this woman, and still can't put, to this day, can't put my finger on why it's so fascinating. But the portrayal was absolutely unbelievable. And you, of course, had a great part in that. And I wanted to ask you first just how this project came to you, because I know it was a COVID project, right?
It was. Well, it came to me at first because Liz Merriweather and I have a history of working together on New Girl. And she's the one who adapted the script from the podcast. And she... asked me to do it with her. I was so excited. We went into the first initial meeting, and it was Kate McKinnon that was going to play her.
Oh, yes.
And the entire time I was like, is this going to be a comedy? Like, I didn't understand it.
The tone. But then
the tone seemed strange, but I also thought Jim Carrey did it. She could do it. It's going to be great. Got to pandemic. Started, everything got shut down. So we only had our first initial meeting with the original director and all the producers, and then everything went away. And then when it did come back, yes, there was still, the pandemic was happening. But by then we had done a few other jobs for fun and projects. And like, I worked with Zooey on this weird project called The Dating Game.
Oh, yeah.
Celebrity Dating.
Yeah.
I remember. Fun. Super fun, but weird. But so I'd already been working during the pandemic, which was fun and not fun, because you have to wear your mask all the time. And it's one thing to wear your mask for an hour, but to have to wear it for 6 hours on set kind of gets crazy.
And these were long days.
12-hour, 18-hour days.
Yeah.
I'm saying like you would be shooting for 4 hours straight, and then you'd go out and take a quick break, like a 10-minute break or whatever. And then you'd get to take your mask off for 2 seconds, put it back on, go in the trailer, change them over, and then go back onto set and wear your mask.
Oh my God.
They were literally like a 1 minute break.
I heard that Amanda.
I like, did have a rash.
You had a rash. Yeah.
Around here.
Oh,
after
yeah.
a while. Like,
I
breakout.
Very familiar with it. Amanda Seyfried came on, and I know she was like, if I'm going to leave my kids and I'm going to come in to this project, it better be for a good reason. So, I mean, this script was absolutely incredible. And I was wondering how late in the game did you know Michael Showalter was involved?
Basically, when it relaunched, it was just ready to go. It was almost like I didn't even check in to see who was doing what. I knew Amanda was in it. I didn't know Michael was directing it. And I was so excited once I found out he was, because he's a real weirdo and I love him.
Every time I love something, he has directed it. He's doing such great work. It's amazing.
He is. He really allows them to gets what they need out of. He gets what he wants out of them, but he also first gives them all the room in the world to breathe.
Wow.
And create before he starts putting in his two cents. It's pretty incredible and really respectful.
That's interesting. And then I love that you called him a little weirdo, because that's exactly what came through with this portrayal of Elizabeth Holmes, how weird she was, you know, and it could be totally on the edge of comedy, but it was just so serious. It was so committed and amazing. And that transformation that you did from when she started to do her voice and started to really explore who she was going to be. Can you tell me about that magical time when you were figuring that all out with Amanda?
Well, she was, I mean, I don't want to tell her story because it's her story. Yeah. So I'll just skirt the top of it. She was pretty incredible and very humble and nervous. You know, why did I say yes? What am I doing? Where am I going?
Of course.
This could be a catastrophe, because it was almost in a comical, like there's a very thin line from that to that. And same with, you know, paralleling her hair and her makeup and her terrible wardrobe that she wore when she was in college. It's like she had a lot of bad taste and a lot of ideas, but she went through all of them and executed it in the weirdest way, as did Amanda. She felt like it was a bad idea that she said yes. She felt like it was a great idea. She loved the script so much. She loved the writing, as we all did. So I think you just have to go, like, it's kind of like you just have to make a complete ass of yourself sometimes in order to like break through into the right place. And when we were doing a camera test, and we very first, you know, this is her college look, because it's barely any makeup, bad hair. And all the producers and everybody, including myself, and I'm standing next to Michael Showalter, and I was like, she looks pretty. Her hair looks healthy. Like, we were kind of bummed. It was like, how do we make her not look so pretty? You know, and all whatever tricks I did, like moving her eye line in a little bit closer, because Amanda Seyfried's eyes are nicely like spread, you know, far. So we were kind of cheating some eyeliner in the inner eye to make them look like they're closer together, and doing some shading. And it kind of felt like still nothing really was working. And she was just doing a camera test. And usually when you do a camera test, you just do a camera test.
Right.
You're just a model. You're just modeling the colors, the background, the scenery, the clothes. And so you don't have to do anything. You don't have to perform. But so when we did put her in the Steve Jobs turtleneck, the Theranos look, and that was the last part of the test, I still looked at the monitor and I thought, she just looks so pretty, you know. And her makeup, I did a terrible job on her makeup, but it looks perfect, you know. And tried to explain to the DP too. I was like, don't be so forgiving with the light. Like, I want all the bad to show. Mm-hmm. And she just looked pretty. And then suddenly she started doing the voice. She turned her whole body into Amanda. And it was literally before our eyes that I think the producers were a little worried. And they kind of were like, can you go back and frizz up her hair to Vanessa Price, the hair person? And can you do some, you know, and then literally like right before our eyes, when she was giving, they were giving us notes, she just turned into her and was talking in the voice. And it was very scary. It was very freaky. It was amazing. Yeah.
Wow.
So we're like, great. I did a great job.
I did a great job at making the most beautiful actress we have today into this disheveled, mousy.
So it really was performance. Yeah.
Now, tell me about the red lipstick. I, of course, am wearing Ruby Woo in honor of your work. But I know that you used the Lancôme red. Is that correct?
I did use the Lancôme red, but I also used this Dior called Bijou.
Both
are both long wear liquid lipsticks, and I sometimes mixed a red tone, an orange tone, and a blue tone. So sometimes I mix them all up together because it depended on what room we were in, and the office didn't lend itself to much with sometimes her lips were bouncing off the walls.
Oh, really?
And to the DP, they said that they weren't going to dial up the reds and that they were going to make it more blue. So it changes the color of the lips. It can, or any colors, you know, so it can turn things that are supposed to be red. And then they, if they put too much blue in there, the lips can turn purple and very, very dark. Or this is a color timing trick. And if you, not trick, but a thing. And if you turn up the, saturate the reds, then it can really like make things bounce off the walls. And the weird thing I noticed is, so I just came up with like a mild formula that I thought this can combat all the scenarios that they might be doing.
Oh.
And then, so sometimes, it depends on sometimes if I was in the office scenes, we would put more of the anti-blue in there.
And then it's colder? Sometimes
when we were at George Shultz's house a lot. It was very warm, you know? So in those, I was able to turn the lips a little bit more blue. But in doing all of my research, I noticed that she also wore like a very warm kind of spice / brick color of red. So we also did that as well. A lot of times on the fundraiser stuff in the daytime, she was like at the luncheon, she was wearing like the lighter version of the red.
Okay. Okay. Now, did you have, for continuity, was this a nightmare or you had it down? You had a system?
I had it down just per location.
Okay.
Just changing the color slightly is nothing weird. The only thing I did notice is one of the times at the very beginning, episode 101, there's one point where she's just walking into the lab and her lips are bright orange. And I don't know why. I swear I didn't do that. It has nothing to do with me. And then she turns another corner and they're fine.
I promise you, only like, you saw this. Only you saw this. It's like when the brides
go back.
Okay. It's like when the brides go and they do their own lips really quickly before they run out and they redo it. And you're like, Amanda, did you redo your lips orange? No. Lady Danger orange.
exactly.
Right? Oh my gosh. So how did you and Vanessa Price really research, and what were your references in developing the look together?
Well, I did a lot of my own research. Vanessa did a lot of her own research. My co-department head, Jillian Whitlock, also did research. And we just put everything into a shared album. And then Claire Parkinson,
costume.
She was the costumer. She had like a nice look Bible of everybody and everything. And that was really great because that helped us then put who then became cast into the show. And you know, we were able to collab, like, you know, Sam Watterson, and he's Charles Schultz. How are we going to what are we going to do with him? What does he want us to do with him? What does he want to do in order to get to this character? And that was the fun thing, is a lot of people, as Sam, he didn't want to look exactly like his character, right. Whereas William Macy, in fact, did.
Tell me about that. Let's talk about William Macy.
Well, yeah, so Richard Fuez is who he played. Richard Fuse is what some people call him, but I think it's Fuez.
I think so too.
He came on and we were very excited. We talked about it and he said, I really want to look like this slime ball. He didn't call the guy a slime ball. He said, I want to be.
That's how I want to do it.
Yeah. And so, you know, but he really was like, I want my hair to be, you know, I want to be losing my hair. I want anger to come from somewhere.
Oh, you know,
like that beautiful. Smart. Not saying all anger is coming from that he's balding, but he wanted to show that he's like holding on to something. He's holding on to youth. There's still time for him to make lots of money and become successful and to become known, because that is who he ultimately wanted to be.
Sure.
And he harbored so much anger and towards what he thought Elizabeth Holmes had felt towards him. And yeah. She did call him out on it and he never forgave her for it.
I mean,
so toxic revenge was his ultimate goal. And he just said, you know, we have to get rid of this hair. And Vanessa, you know, said, yes, okay, we'll do it.
So then prosthetics were involved. Did you have a prosthetics department for his character?
I hired somebody who was really like a pro at bald caps, who had no time to even fit him for the bald caps. There was a tiny window that he flew in and he flew out. So by the time we realized how far back he wanted to go, for us to have cast him to custom a bald cap, we lost our window. They weren't willing to fly my guy out to where he lives to cast him. We had to, Vance Hartwell is the person that I hired, and we just had to use like a commercial bought Krylon bald cap. He did it and he looked great.
I'm shocked. Yeah. That's amazing. Wow. That's some skill. Yeah. That's some skill.
Yeah. And then we kind of readied it, like made his skin look really ruddy, kind of alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And then we did a lot of spots on top of it and did everything we could to hide the lines, the bald cap line.
I mean, it looked great.
But it worked out perfect. Yeah, it did. He made it look so good. And he executed it every time. Exactly. It looked great. There was a lot of elements that we were fighting against, not just wearing the mask, but also like wearing a mask when you're not shooting on set, like that compromises the bald cap.
Oh, of course.
But also just, it was so darn hot because this was in July and August and September. So we were fighting the heat and it can really lift those caps very easily.
Yeah, of course. I didn't think about that at all, that the actors had to wear masks when they weren't shooting. Ugh. Now, can you tell me a little bit, we were talking about it before, about how everything was so congested because of COVID and everybody being on different projects all at once. And so you took on a co-department head. And can you tell me about that a little bit? How that came to be?
Yeah. So the way it usually works is, you know, shooting series is much like shooting a film. You might shoot one location and do all of the days of shooting at that one place, or sometimes they try to shoot it in sequence. So we did a lot of that. We revisited a lot of locations to shoot episode one and episode two. And we'd go back to that same location, like Richard's house or whatever. We went back, I think we shot at his house twice, though we had many scenes and many different episodes there, but we spent 2 days shooting all the parts at his house, at that particular house, I think twice throughout the entire months of shooting. But the other thing was everything has kind of become compressed as far as a calendar goes because of COVID, because the longer you take to shoot something, the higher chance you have of everybody getting COVID and freaking out. So keeping the bubble small, keeping the time frame small is kind of a safety net. And then also what I had said, and I'm not 100% sure about this, but this is what I was pulling information from the producers, and everybody, and the casting agents, is that they said that series and the way that actors get paid now is different than how they used to get paid. So agents usually don't want to have them working on your
for a long
show for 6 months. They'd rather have them on there for 2 months or 1 month, you know. Okay. So there's all this like moving parts of like shooting an actor out so they can go to the other series.
Right. And
there's so many moving parts that I was like, I don't know if I know how to do this kind of show because I've never done it like this
so
before.
Different.
And we're all learning and figuring it out because shooting two different shows at the same time is exactly what we're doing. And so you just have to secure all your extra people that you're hiring and following this calendar that is changing all the time, because that was a huge cast of people. And a lot of times they'd have to pop off and go on another show that they were already obligated to start and then come back on. And so the calendar was constantly changing. And so was our employees and our cast. So we just had to, so Jillian helped me with that. It was more than just chasing a red lip.
You know what?
I can froze.
I did. I can see that in the work that it was more than chasing a red lip. And that, first of all, I want to say that is so, I think that's so wonderful of you to want to do your best work always, that you were able to delegate and sort of figure out how you were going to manage like this insane avalanche of something that was new to you, because as experienced as you are, it's really inspiring to see that you still face things that are kind of throw you for a second, and then you figure it out. And this is a great solution, and nobody suffers. Nothing is compromised. And I think that's really,
thank you.
Yeah. I
thank you. We try to stay humble, and like, there's no, I always joke that I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And, you know, because it is like every job is a different job. There's every actor is different from your last actor. They're not all the same, and they all have different needs. And there's just productions are different, ADs, producers, all that. Some run so smoothly, some run so horribly, that you just have to be willing to kind of go with the flow and be there for the ebbs and flows and have a good team. And like, we all trust each other. And I absolutely don't have any ego when it comes to, you know, getting the glory. It's like, my team is a part of this process that I could never, I shouldn't even call them a team. I normally don't. I usually just say our department, because it's so gross when people are like, it's my team. It's like, I don't own them. They're individuals, and they're all artists, and they're all talented, and couldn't do it without them.
I hear you. The team, what do you do when I would even call the person that you're transforming part of the team, because they're weighing in on everything. And I always am curious when people do biopics or transformations like this into a person. And I assume you all fell in love with Elizabeth Holmes, you know, strangely, as not fell in love with her, but, you know, you love her despite her flaws. And like, do you honor her or Amanda? Do you, like, if you come up against something that maybe you don't agree with that Amanda would want, how do you get through that?
Again, just not having an ego, again, just being a makeup artist who is more or less not there to win an Emmy. You really are there to like you're there to help the actor get through the process and bring them to exactly where they want to be. I've never really had a conflict with people, reading the script, loving the script. There's been a few times where I've seen actors make bad choices and it's disappointing, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to stop them from doing it. Sometimes I'll try to
convince them,
talk them into it, but I never had that with this project. This project, it was like, everybody was full in, everybody was making great choices. Naveen was making great choices.
Oh yeah.
He was like amazing. His transformation was amazing. Yeah. Amanda, like even when she was the college flashback when she'd been sexually assaulted and she's walking through the hallway.
I'll never forget that scene.
And you know, yeah. And we were like, Vanessa was putting a twig through her hair. I just put some spray and messed up her makeup a little bit. And honestly, just her, where she went was there. And it was so sad and so horrible. And like, that is when I truly, when the actor just took me there live to Elizabeth Holmes' moment of like sadness and that, you know, and I felt that. And that's kind of the journey sometimes you do take when you go into these projects. You're like, sometimes it's going to actually affect you. You know.
That's so, it just gave me chills when you were describing that, because I remember saying to my husband, like, you can tell exactly what happened just with this look. Like if you just isolated this and showed me 30 seconds of this, I would know exactly what happened. And that's a credit to everybody that it took to make that scene happen. Because if I remember correctly, it's just a descent down the hallway, right? Like it's just a walk down the hall. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was mm-hmm. amazing. And that's of course when it changes for the viewer, when you're like, oh, this is a human being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that is the question you asked me earlier that I don't think I really answered was, did I grow to like Elizabeth Holmes? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were definitely, I was back and forth. It was definitely like, what a piece of shit. You
know, sure.
These cancer patients have to be. And then there was other times where I was like, this is a startup group. She was so damn determined. Mm. That she just had her horse blinders on and she was going to win this race. And she did not see that she was hurting anyone else or leaving them in the dust or
totally blind.
She wanted to get some fish line. Yeah. And it was awful, but I also understand that what happened to her in the past, how her mom talked to her about men and how they are. It's like, she weaponized herself and put an armor on and walked through that path and didn't want to stop, wasn't going to stop. She was so determined.
And that's something everybody can relate to and like maybe wishes they had a piece of sometimes to get through a hard time. And yeah that's why the story is what did you say?
And the determination to reach a goal. Sometimes, you know, it's very easy to be like, yeah, that's too hard. I'm going to go try something else.
Yes, totally.
People are too competitive. She didn't have that piece of part in her brain.
No. And I, and that's what makes the story so compelling. I mean, obviously, you know, you're so conflicted and surprisingly on paper, it seems like mm-hmm. you would just have made the decision and that's it. I hate her. What a crazy person.
Yeah.
And it's just not that easy. It's fascinating. Can you tell me, Georgie, how you got started in the business? In the industry?
Yeah, I was in a all-girl band, like a grungy band.
Is that how you know Theo? Is that how you know Theo Kogan? Oh my gosh, amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, she was in the Lunatics. We were in a girl band called Stone Fox. We were like the San Francisco Lunatics version. And like didn't even know. It was one of those fun things where you don't even know that's happening in New York. It's like I almost feel like we started at the same time. But cause like our first time we ever played was like 1989. And then like we took a break and then we started back up again.
Oh my God.
Cause we were a parody band, we were a joke band, but we became friends with like Metallica and all these bands in San Francisco we became friends with, like Linda Perry from the Four Non-Blondes.
Stop it!
But they were always like, they liked my style, and I used to stylize our band and do their hair and makeup. So they asked me to, Metallica asked me to change their style and change it up. So that's when they like all cut their hair and put on some nice duds. And yeah, and that was fun.
I was not expecting that.
I realized I didn't want to be a stylist. And my friend Molly Stern was also like a huge fan of our band. And I don't know if you know Molly Stern, but she's a great makeup artist. She's
yes.
Reese Witherspoon's makeup artist. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she works with a lot of people. She's amazing. So she kind of like, oh, just do this with me. It's so easy. And I was like, you're right. This is so much easier than lugging around a bunch of clothes for people. Yeah. So yeah, I just started doing it. And I was like, wow, the money's amazing. Cause you can go on tour, come home broke and do one day of work. And you've like made a month worth of salary.
Who did you tour with? Who did you do makeup on tour?
I didn't do makeup on tour. Our band, when our band would tour.
Oh, got it. Got it. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. And then, so Molly Stern introduced you to this whole world. And then that was, you fell in love.
Which was more commercial and fashion. And then sure. I did that for many years, did that in New York, and then met my husband, had a cute baby named Maude. And then we moved out here and I was like, I need to start doing television.
Yeah.
She's getting to the age where we can't, you know, move from place to place. Cause I was doing movies and we were going to Nashville and doing this and doing that. And she was young. So it was easy. And he's yeah. freelance composer. So he could do it anywhere. But then finally I was like, she's got to go to school, preschool. So I was like, I'll work in television and then you can just, we'll move here and it'll be great. And then I landed New Girl, which was crazy.
Yay.
And it was like 8-7 seasons of good times.
Georgie, was there a favorite day on set or alternatively a day where you thought you would run away and not come back? Or both?
Day on set, we had a lot of fun. Amanda brought her dog. We loved her dog, Finn. We just had so much fun. Everybody was so nice. Wanting to run away was, I think, the day that we had to shoot on a boat because everybody was scared to get on that boat.
And, oh, God, that Amanda, episode. Yes. And Amanda was what? I interrupted you.
She gets seasick and she didn't want to go on it.
Oh,
and
God.
Michael was like, this is going to look amazing, you know, and we have to do it. And they almost had talked she almost talked them out of doing the boat. But Michael was like, no way, we have to show what a, you know, that guy is a douchebag.
Yeah. Yeah.
She got really sick and I wasn't allowed on the, I wasn't allowed on the boat. We had to pick either Vanessa or myself, like one representative from, which was not fair, but Vanessa's done makeup before. And so I was like, go ahead. You're going to actually be way busier with hair because it's going to be windy up there. So you go. And I didn't have to go. So I Thank really God. Lucked out. But everybody, she got sick. Everybody got sick. Oh, everyone no. got sick. So, except Michael Showalter and the actor who played Ellison. We did do a panel at El Capitan where it was like a question and answer panel where you just watch little spots and then somebody was hosting these questions and all these fans were in the audience of Hulu. I mean, of The Dropout. And that was really fun because I realized when we all walked out that every makeup, art department, casting, hair, costume, everybody was a woman. It was all women entirely. On the panel, there wasn't one man, which was amazing and exciting.
I don't know if this generation coming up understands how big of a deal that is, because I think that they're growing up into more representation. But I mean, all I ever knew was straight men for film and TV and gay men for fashion. And, you know, it's really amazing to see. Do you see a big difference happening?
I do. I think everybody's trying to make an effort and have some diversity. I just got off of a show that it's called American Born Chinese. And that was such a great experience. That I think that'll be coming out in January. But okay. It was such a great experience because diversity that was on set was really real and amazing. And everybody was so, I'm honored to be here kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, I am too, you know, because you do get a little jaded when you've been working here for a while. And like, you know, the hours are hard and the food you generally sucks. So it does wear on you. And you're like, this drive sucked and this is terrible. And, but then, you know, being on The Dropout, it was like, every day Amanda brought it. She was so nice. Every week she'd buy like a fun food truck for everybody. So she really was so great. We all had like there was like a good camaraderie and spirit there on set, which was fantastic. And it really makes a difference. And it's like, how are you the cheerleader of the show and you are killing it as your performance?
You know, like, right, because usually it's a compensation for like somebody being insecure about their performance or something that they like rally everyone and you know, but no.
She was a social butterfly. It was crazy. It's like, don't we have work to do? Like, what are we doing here? Why are we having so much fun?
Oh my God. And then she just turns it on. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. No, she's like, I always just say to my friend, like, she's like Kate Winslet, like she's next. Like, there's stuff there that people do not know about that's coming. I feel, you know, she's really going to be one of our great actresses. She's incredible.
I think so.
And do you have any advice for those who are trying to get into the business, especially for film and TV, because it's pretty hard to break in, especially like I broadcast from New York. That's harder than LA. Do you not agree?
Well, they were doing, there are these like diversity programs for people who aren't in the union, because you have to be in the union, but there's a lot of non-union projects, like anything for YouTube that's being shot on YouTube, anything on the internet, you can work as a makeup artist or hair person. You know, DM people, find a show that you like, find out who produces it, reach out to the producers, reach out to the makeup people. Like, definitely, I usually try to, when I am looking and I have been DM'd, I usually try to follow up with it. And I usually try to, you know, respond and, you know, communicate with them in however I possibly can. But yeah, I think it's just that's the way you do it. There's not a wall that you can't get in. There definitely are doors. You just have to knock on them.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for spending time with me, Georgie.
Coming up next, I will be speaking to the people behind your addiction, Stranger Things. Amy L. Forsythe and Devin Morales will be talking to me about The Upside Down, and you don't want to miss that. So make sure you're subscribed, and I will see you then.
Look Behind the Look is a Vinyl Foot production, written by me, your host, Tiffany Bartok, produced by Jace Bartok, edited by Nicole Tucker. If you're interested in learning more, find our video version on the YouTube channel, Look Behind the Look Podcast. There you can see rare photos and clips from our guests. And please follow us on Twitter at Look Behind Pod and Instagram at Look Behind the Look. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe. And tell your friends and spread the word. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or any podcatcher of your choice. Thanks for listening to Look Behind the Look.